To quote the ancient Mandalorian code, this is the way.
Can't go on the basketball floor and not be competitive. You better like to freaking compete. This is dormant, it's not dead. You can wake this sleeping beast with a little enthusiasm, a little excitement, a little relentless energy every single day.
There's the horn of Fighting Phoenix! Pack up the University of California! Golden Bears, the Fighting Phoenix move on to round two of the NCAA tournament!
The Green Bay Phoenix men's basketball team, your Horizon League champions here in 2013-14. The Green Bay Phoenix are going to the NCAA tournament.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the Fear the Phoenix podcast. My name is Brian Dickman, and in a few minutes I'll be joined by my guy Jim Cerro as well. I hope everybody's having a great summer. I know we're still about 3 months out from the season opener when Green Bay will tip off at Iowa State on November 6th. It's fun to think about how quickly basketball season is approaching, but you know, at the same time, that means summer will be winding down here soon, so we've got to enjoy these warm weather days while we can. But you may have noticed the Star Wars-themed remix on the intro today. That's because we need a special intro for our special guest. Jim and I had a really fun conversation with the head coach of the Phoenix on Friday, Mr. Sundance Wicks. I know he's done about, at least it seems like, he's done about 400 podcasts and local media interviews since he arrived in Green Bay. And you should definitely go and listen to every single one of them just because he is so good at being engaging and having these interesting and insightful conversations. But we did try to avoid asking some of the stuff that he's been asked a bunch of times during these previous interviews. So, trying to get some new information about the current team, some of his coaching philosophies, and obviously we had to throw some fun stuff in there as well. So, overall, I thought it was a good conversation. There is a little bit of microphone feedback for the first few minutes, but that does get sorted out, so just power through that. But other than that, I hope you all enjoy listening to our interview with Green Bay head coach Sundance Wicks. But from there, go ahead and take it away, Jim.
All right, coach, let's jump right into it. I got a couple of fun questions to get started here. One question is actually regarding the interview process itself. When you have found out that the opportunity was available and you're working through the search and screen committee, I had heard that you told the search and screen committee that you are the only candidate that we will have that has previously worked with a school that has a mascot that is a mythical creature and also had an AD named Josh at the same time.
Oh man, you're already down the ever elusive rabbit hole. Holy crap.
Yeah, so can you confirm or deny that was actually your sales pitch, or was there something else that you think put you over the top?
You know, I got to say, it was probably your website. I'm not going to lie to you. Like, it was a Fear the Phoenix website. I mean, in all honesty, guys, it's funny. You gotta find something on the internet that gives you a leg up or whatever, and you guys have so much information on your website, the Fear the Phoenix. I'm like, these guys are the super fans. I also know that they might be crazy. I had no idea who you guys were, so I'm like, these guys can either be really cool or really crazy. Either way, I'm probably gonna rock with them because I like a little bit of crazy as well. But when you go on your website, you guys have everything Phoenix, and I'm sitting here and I'm going, okay, this is pretty good. And then I started listening to some of your podcasts on who the potential candidates are, and you know what? You never mentioned Sundance Wicks, and that's what I like. I like the dark horse stuff here, okay? So you had, even as much you guys are insiders, you had no idea where I was coming from. I was like the mythical creature, the griffin, all right? And so we have a phoenix here, but the griffin, what is half lion, half eagle, all right? Wings of an eagle, body of a lion. And that, I would love to see a straight-up showdown between a griffin and a phoenix and just see what happens. It's kind of like some Harry Potter Hogwarts stuff, but, you know, like, you got ADs that are both named Josh Looney, you know, just Loon, the Loon Man and the Moon Man. Josh Looney, Josh Moon. And then you got a Griffin, right? And a Phoenix. I feel like it's just the mythical transformation's already happening. So I did actually put that in my interview process. I'm not sure it gave me a leg up. They might have just thought it was interesting enough to call me back for a second time.
Perfect. Well, switching to a little more serious note, you know, when you're thinking about the interview process, like you had experience as a D2 head coach, but you didn't have D1 head coaching experience, which, you know, you go to the Fear of the Phoenix information that was out there. You know, that was something that some people wanted, right? You know, you think about like a very difficult set of circumstances allowed you to coach your very first D1 game. And, you know, it was in the middle of the end of the Wyoming season. Your mentor and, you know, Coach Lindner was dealing with the personal issue, couldn't, you know, coach. And then here you are applying for the Green Bay job and going through that process. And you get your first chance to coach a D1 game with so much on the line. Like, how did you navigate that? And how do you work through those things?
Well, I mean, what's more powerful than any sort of play are the people around you. And I think what got lost, and I hope it didn't get lost in a lot of that stuff, was just what people go through, real things. I mean, coaches have real human problems, man. We're not robots, and we're not immune to the things that happen in life. You know, when your family gets sick, like your dad gets sick, you know, my grandma died that year. Coach Linder allowed me to go up to my grandma's funeral. I mean, there's a lot of coaches that would have told you, like, you better go up and be back. He allowed me to go up to my grandma's funeral. I mean, one of our assistant coaches, Sean Vandeveer's mom, died that year. And so it is, you talk about things that you go through, and everyone thinks it's just coaching basketball games. But at the end of the day, you're talking about guys like Hunter Thompson and Hunter Maldonado who are going through their potentially last game in a storied career for the Cowboys without their head coach. And for me, it's just being there to provide a level of support and comfort for those guys to go out there and experience that last game in its entirety, win or lose, but also to celebrate their careers and to not fall on deaf ears, you know, what Coach Linder was going through. I just, the lack of humanity sometimes in this profession astounds me when it comes to just the way coaches lead other guys, or the way that the bosses lead coaches, or the way that players or coaches lead players. There's a human element to this that should never be forgotten. And so for me, like, just stepping into that moment, I'd already sat on the sidelines before the sidelines. It's just being comfortable with the guys that you're around and making sure that experience goes the way you want it to for them. And then they just get the pulpit, you know, at the end to share how their journey ended and what they thought and how they want to thank people and the gratitude and the joy and the sorrow and the pain and all that stuff mixed it together. I pray that people throughout this approach, don't look at coaches as some sort of guys that are supposed to be, you know, perfect by any means or any stretch of imagination, but also understand, like, you know, I got a family, I got two kids, you know, got a wife. Our job is public and we get it, and that's what we sign up for. But, you know, the criticism's also public. And like anybody sitting here criticizing somebody who misses a call on a State Farm, you know, getting tweeted about, you know, like, oh God, Jake from State Farm, he didn't close that one today. I mean, what a bad performance by Jake from State Farm. His khakis look terrible today. You know, like, nobody's talking about Jake from State Farm, you know, whether he wins or loses in a meeting or sales.
Yeah. Yeah. You guys are under the microscope for sure.
And it's part of it. I get it. I mean, it's just what it is. That's why I like to be, I always say you can have two personas out there as a coach. You can be personal and private, or you can be public and professional. But you can't be, you know, public and unprofessional, you know, and you can't be personal, right? And think that you're going to be, like, not in the public eye at some point. So why not just share it all? I'm going to be public and professional. Or you can be personal and private and not allow anybody to come in your life. You got two choices. But really, there's no middle ground outside of that. So I embrace it. I love it. It's part of the job. And I want that excitement out there, to be honest with you. I mean, some coaches don't like the camera around. I do. I want our guys to get used to it. I want our guys to think bigger. Social media and technology is not going away anytime soon. So the idea is that you can just hide behind, you know, some sort of shell or shadow is irrelevant. I mean, it's going to be on you at some point.
Yeah. Yeah. Speaking of that public persona, you've definitely, you know, you've only been here a few months, but you've already been out and about in the community a lot. You've done ton of interviews, ton of podcasts, you know, get involved with the local media and things like that. Getting involved with the community engagement stuff in Green Bay with the steak fry, the golf outing, the stuff you're doing with the 1969 Society, So just kind of curious, what has your initial impression been of the community engagement in Green Bay? And maybe how does that compare to some of the other mid-major stops that you've had in your career?
I mean, it's the perfect mix right here. You got to give to get in this community. I mean, it's the one lesson you can learn from Kevin Borsett and his team. It's like the ladies do a phenomenal job of getting out of the community. And you can learn something from everybody how to run their stuff. But ultimately, like, for anybody to have ownership in what we do, if we want people to have collective ownership, and we want everybody in the community to be involved, it can't just be sitting up here and telling people to come to us. You got to go to the people. And what I've loved is everybody has been, even my wife will say this, is the level of support and how much people actually really want to help. I mean, really, really want to help. If you need anything, or if you want to, you know, people are always providing opportunities or platforms for us to go at and be at. And you can't say yes to everything. You'll drive yourself crazy. But the level of just appreciation, for one, when we do go out, but two, the level of connectivity where they want us to be out. That's probably been my favorite part. And it's big enough market, but it's a small enough market to have that kind of small college feel. But Green Bay is a big town, man. It's the number one place to live in the United States of America. It's U.S. News. Yeah. We all know that. So you talk about just being a foodie up here and being able to eat at a lot of different spots. And then you got Door County. Went up there and picked some cherries a couple weekends ago with the family. The water activities around here. Everybody loves to golf. The weather is phenomenal because there's no wind. All right. There's literally no wind. So it's awesome to have that 80 degree sunset, you know, when you're looking over Lambeau Field. It's pretty remarkable place to live. And the community makes a lot of that because it's just everyone is so genuinely friendly around here. There's Minnesota nice, you know, there's Green Bay friendly. I'll say that.
And they clash sometimes, Minnesota nice and Green Bay friendly.
I know what's coming down the pipe. Yep.
Yeah. So obviously, you know, you get settled in a little bit. One of the first things you had to do was evaluate what you had on the court and address the roster situation. But I'm curious, now that you've, you know, had a few months under your belt, have you been able to evaluate the program off the court and identify any high priority areas that you'd like to address or make the, you know, infrastructure, facilities, things like that, anything that you've noticed right away that could help make this a stronger program?
Yeah, I mean, look, you've worked at all levels, and I know this. It's not, you know, what you have, it's who you have as far as people are concerned. And you can have, you know, crap for facilities and resources, but you can have phenomenal human beings around your program that want to win and will do whatever it takes to win. And they just understand, like, the mission. They understand the mission is not, you know, the material objects that we have, but the mission is the man and the mission is our program and how we can continue to carry our culture forward. So from that aspect, it's always an arms race. I mean, if you have, you're going to want to have more, right? And if you don't have, you're going to want more. You're going to want to make sure that you do some stuff to keep up with the Joneses, so to speak. And I think that's where we're at right now. I mean, I thought with Kowalczyk and Wardle coming in, they did a really good job of kind of setting the standard and the bar for the way a lot of things were run and done around here after the Bennett and Heidemann eras, right? And I think there's kind of been, like, you know, these different eras. The Bennett, you know, obviously Buss was, I'll tell you this, Dave Buss, like, that's my guy. Like, Dave Buss is my guy. You talk about taking a team from NAIA to D2 to D1, like, name one other head coach that successfully transitioned, you know, a program to three different levels of basketball and was able to sustain his success. I mean, what a dude right there. So there's Buss, and then Bennett. Like, I got a lot of history with Coach Bennett just because we got a lot of traces when we played with Coach Meyer from Dick Bennett, blocker mover style. And then obviously, you know, he came and spoke at a coaching academy in Aberdeen, South Dakota, where I was playing. He still probably doesn't remember me to this day, but I made a lot of shots in front of him, probably really impressed him. He didn't remember it when I talked to him, so I felt pretty bad about that. But then you go into the, you know, the Heidemann and then Kowalczyk and Wardle era. They were the first ones, I think, to kind of jumpstart the arms race. And really with the Crest, you know, with the addition of the Crest Center, which is phenomenal, their own locker room, their own the Dick Bennett practice facility. At the time, it was the cat's meow. I mean, it was the stuff. And that, you know, it hasn't changed a lot since then. There's been some aesthetic upgrades, but not enough to really keep up. And I think that's where we're at right now is I understand the winning aspect of this. I do. I'll be blatantly honest about that as much as anybody. Like, I get the idea. The bottom line is you got to win. There's got to be different marks in the ledger. But ultimately, like, if you want to win, you got to do winning things. And winning things are having locker rooms and facility upgrades that match the current era and the state that we're in. So you got, if you're not going to do, And I'm not saying that we're not, but it just, this is an overarching example. If you're not going to do NIL or collective stuff, then you better make sure you have the best facilities. You know, if you're not going to do extra things above and beyond, you better make sure that where your guys work, live, and play is right. And so for me, just internally audit, I think we're doing a great job right now. We got locker room transformations underway, brand new lockers coming, brand new carpet through the locker room. We're going to take the roof off it. We're going to blow it out. We're going to make that place like the place for players to work, live, and play. So when you come to Green Bay, you walk out of there with the wow factor. The practice facility is getting all wrapped with all new padding. It's getting wall wrapped. It's going to look sweet. It's going to have green stuff and signage all the way over through it. Honoring the past, you know, the Green Bay way on the wall. It's going to be sweet. And so just starting there lets me know that we're serious about what we're doing around here. There's got to be visible evidence of change, not just in the way your program plays and the results you have, but also internally, like you talked about, infrastructure wise. I tell you, Josh Moon, he moves the needle in that area. Like that guy's relentless. I would say Josh is relentless, man. He moves the needle in a lot of ways because he just doesn't sleep. And it's a one man army, but I'm over here trying to like make sure I can help him. Like I'm storming those beaches with him. Like I want to make sure that I'm in those trenches, those foxholes with Josh, because that's what he brought me here to do, and not sit back and coach. That's part of it. But I'm going to be out in the community. I got to be a fundraiser, right? I got to be a friendraiser. I got to be the guy who helps, you know, carry the culture of the athletic department as well. And I'm okay with that. I love that. It's part of this process.
Yeah. Yeah. Well said. And that's exciting to hear about those things coming down the line. So you've got your summer workouts going on now. Obviously you just joined us from straight off the court, pretty much it sounded like, but just kind of curious, how do you feel the workouts are going so far? And then what kind of stuff are you working on during these summer months? Like, are you guys, you know, full on installing your offense, running set plays, or is it more high level, like fundamentals, getting guys familiar, playing with each other, that kind of stuff?
You know, I think every summer is going to be different the way you approach it, because every summer you should have stacked some stuff from the previous year and kind of have a better idea where you're at. Right now, you have to treat this like the movie What About Bob. It's one of my favorite movies, right? What About Bob with Bill Murray and, you know, Dr. Marvin, Dr. Leo Marvin. You know, it's baby steps. It's baby steps right now. That's kind of where we're at. We're at baby steps in our program. You could get a little bit too excited. I'll always put some stuff on a practice plan and it's probably a little overzealous. I mean, we'll never get to it, but I always put it on there like, man, when we get to that, like this would be a fun practice. But right now we're still teaching Hall of Fame footwork. We're teaching body ball movement. We're teaching timing, accuracy, quickness, and deception on passes. We're teaching the setups and ball screen and the angles and ball screens. We're teaching where to be spacing wise on the floor, the different spacing spots you have to be to make sure that what you do is successful. We're teaching defensive spacing, ball screen coverages, defending different screens. Just all the terminology. It's basically just a culture camp. I mean, it's ultimately, you're not going to get it all done, but you got to have a requisite foundation by the time you're done here with the summer. And for us, I think our main goals were to, one, understand spacing on offense and respacing. It was two, understand our ball screen defense. That's just, I think you got to have a really good ball screen defense to play nowadays and be competitive defensively. And then paint defense for us right now is, we don't have a lot of install with offensive stuff, so we've just been repping a lot of just where are we supposed to be, stance, vision, position, talk, anticipate on defense. What does it look like? Where are you at when you're guarding the ball screen? Are you in the high? Are you in the hot and the hold? Are the high and the hot? Are we tagging, not tagging? You know, what does it look like in a drag? Are you over, under? Is it too high? Is it too low? What's it look like, you know, when it's, you know, on the outer third? And so just repping all these little fundamental foundation things that go into building a program that you can't overlook right now, because we can't just come in and play 5-on-5. You got to get to know each other. It doesn't matter what you run. If your guys don't like each other and they're not connected, it doesn't matter what you do, how you play, it's going to be a lost cause. So for me, more than anything, my coaching staff may think I'm crazy, but I spend a lot more time on the connectivity side of this and coaching the connectivity and coaching the culture. As much as I do coaching concepts, probably even more. And so that's just kind of where we're at right now.
Yeah. Yeah. It's good to hear about the, especially the defensive aspects. I don't know how much you pay attention to like KenPom or those kind of
a lot.
Efficiency stats, but Green Bay has not been very good, I'll say, yeah, to put it kindly, the last 5 years on the defense.
Will you ever read the book, The Art of War, Brian?
I have not, no.
So the book, The Art of War, is a really good defensive book. It's a really, actually a really good strategy book, to be honest with you. But there's a page in The Art of War, and it literally just goes through the idea of like what a great defense can do for you in war, right? It could protect you, right? It can help you have the advantage to win every game. But see, the kicker is you can have a great defense, but like if all you do is protect and you never attack, you're not guaranteed victory, right? And so the part of the other side of this that gets lost in The Art of War is everybody talks about defense, 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 and we do too, but we have to have the ability to attack. And if we don't have weaponry, if we can't take our cavalry out there and attack and put you on your heels, we can protect all we want to. We may be in every game, but we got to give ourselves a chance to win it. And so now I think the next phase of this is going to be really stepping up our level of attack as we go into the fall.
Yeah. Yeah. So speaking of the cavalry, taking a look at the current roster, it's always fun for fans to talk about, you know, who's going to play where, the starting lineup, what the rotation is going to look like, that kind of stuff. I know.
Love that stuff.
Yeah. Even during the golf outing, you know, a couple weeks ago, our foursome was having fun talking about the possibilities, but just kind of curious if you and your staff are having those kind of conversations at this stage of the off season, and then more so just kind of curious to get your overall thoughts on the roster and maybe some strengths you guys have identified, or maybe even some weaknesses that, you know, hey, we got to work on this kind of stuff. Just kind of overall your thoughts on the roster.
I don't want to give all my scouting report stuff away yet. You know, you guys aired us and everybody in the league starts preparing for us already.
You're giving us too much credit there.
Yeah. But, you know, I do know this. I mean, the Horizon guys might steal this stuff, you know what I'm saying? Take it out.
That's
there.
That's true. Yeah, you can't trust those guys.
Those guys. I love those guys. They're crazy, man. You guys ever get on that one? You guys go talk on that one too?
Jim's a regular on that one. Yeah.
Yeah, that's fun. Those guys are fun, man. They're fun. No, I think from just a personnel standpoint, the biggest thing you look for is consistency, right? It's the consistency, and we don't like moody guys. You can't have guys that show up one day and not show up the next. And I think all our E3 consistency, like our energy, effort, enthusiasm, has been pretty consistent, which is hard to do. To come in every single day in a random Wednesday in the middle of summer and see if guys are actually talking and communicating. And so that part, the connectivity part, has been good. I think the toughness part and the trust part could get a little bit better. Just got to get a little tougher, more physical. Coach Monahan, you'll hear him all the time talk about, we got to be more physical. I'm like, well, we don't want to foul, coach, every possession. But you'll hear him say, you know, you'll always hear coach talk about being more physical. But the trust side is just trusting that guys are going to be in their spots, are going to do their job. Right. I think that's a part that always continues to evolve is I always say like the most one of the things that you got to learn to do is you almost have to put yourself in a failure ridden position because you trust so much. I said, like, if you do your job at such a high level and somebody doesn't do theirs, like I can go coach the guy who doesn't do theirs. But if everybody's worried about somebody else not doing their job, now I'm coaching all five of you talking about trust issues. And I just need to make sure that maybe we have four guys that got it all right and one guy doesn't. Still going to be not right, but at least I know like that guy, like we can just work on those set of trust issues, right? I sound like a Drake album right now. I got trusted, you know, but I think that's probably the hardest part is getting guys to get out of the fear of failure. Like, oh, it's my guy or it's my man right now. And I'm trying to show coaches what I can do versus look, it's our possession. It's not your shot. It's our shot. It's not, you know, my guy beat me. It's that guy beat our team. Like, how do we stop them collectively? And so from the consistency standpoint, I think that's a big part of just finding guys who can consistently show up every single day. But then, you know, after you're consistent, you got to be competitive. So these are the way we evaluate our guys before they go home for the summer. We'll just take you through the evaluation process after 8 weeks is, were you consistent? Were you consistently competitive? Okay. Were you consistent in your cultural accountability? So were you a locker room leader? Were you a locker room lawyer? You know, what kind of guy were you? Were you always saying the right things? And then you got to be consistent in your academic output. So want to make sure that, you know, guys got to go to class. Ultimately, we understand like you're here to get a degree, bro. Like go get your degree. Go be great in class. Don't be a B guy getting C's. Don't be a C guy getting D's. So be who you are. And then all of a sudden, you know, maybe accelerate your growth a little bit. Could help you out a whole lot. And then you got to have social accountability. And, you know, were you doing the right things off the floor? Were you? And I'll add, you know, outside of the ability, I'll add the weight room too, because that's a big part of the summer for us is taking those guys that with bodies and making sure, like, did you do your job in the weight room? I know this. You may not ever lift a weight in your life, but if you really are intentional about going in the weight room and you want to gain weight and you want to do your job, eating the protein and getting the carbs that you need, you're going to gain weight if you really want to do it. And it's like, either you do or you don't, man. You don't really have any choices. It's like those guys that sit there and think they got choices, the old Nick Saban line, you got one choice if you want to be great. Show up and do the damn work. And so ultimately, like, you can really just, if you wanted to dumb it all down, you just, did you show up, do the work, the right work, and then you serve others every single day? And that's kind of how we would measure a summer success by an individual. Who's the most connected? Who's the least connected? Were you productive? How was your maintenance level? And then at that point, we could talk about who's playing. Because then, you know, outside of there, you just kind of like players tell on themselves all the time, guys. They tell on themselves. Yeah. And ultimately, as Coach Linder said, I love this Linderism right here, but your decisions reveal your priorities. So the decisions you usually make ultimately reveal your priorities. So you could say you love basketball and you could say you love to be in the gym, but if you're never in the gym, did you really love it? Your decisions reveal your priorities, and players always tell on themselves.
Well said. I like that one as well. So last one from me, and then I'll actually let Jim ask some questions here. But so you had your elite camp yesterday at the Crest, and you've already got a verbal commitment for the 2024 class, which I know you're not allowed to talk about specifics, but in general, how are you and your staff going to approach high school recruiting now that the one-time transfer rule is in place and guys can leave without having to sit a year? I have to think that makes it tough to plan for the future. So, I mean, has that changed your approach at all when you're recruiting high school kids?
Not really. I mean, to be honest with you, like, we want the right fit for us. So, like, if we get the right kid and the right kid and we all, our whole staff recruits guys. I'm not a coach who sits there and like, I need you to bring me guys. Like, no, we got to go get guys. Like, we have to go get guys. Like, we have to do the job. Obviously, certain coaches will probably take lead on guys, but we're all hitting guys up. I mean, it's not like you just one guy does that and then falls on his shoulders. I know I got to help close the deal too. I mean, they're ultimately going to play for me. They have relationships with everybody, but they're going to play for me. So we just got to recruit the right guys, you know, the right guys. If I can find that out pretty quick, man, like, it's not really hard for me. It's you either got juice or you don't. And juice for me, well, like, I love your spirit, right? I love who you are. And that way, like, then they're going to know, like, I'm not a different person when you come into my office on a recruiting visit, you know, than I am when you come in here. You're going to feel it. And either you're going to be like, I'm not sure. This guy, I'm not for everybody, right? That's like this. You know, not everybody likes IPAs. Okay. I'm not a big IPA guy. It's a little too hoppy for me, to be honest with you. So you know what I'm not going to do? I'm not going to drink an IPA. Just don't ever offer me one. And so it's the same way with coaches. Like, not every coach is for every player. And you have to know, you know, what your palate likes and what it doesn't. And ultimately, if you like a nice Phoenix Rising red lager, you know, nice. It feels good, then you're probably going to take that bad boy and you might buy a couple more, you know. So it's a shameless self plug right there for the old Phoenix Rising red lager.
Well,
finding quick trips around the area.
Yeah, I had more than a few of those on the golf course, the golf outing. So
I think we're handing those bad boys out, man. We're just giving those bad boys out. It's awesome.
Hey, Coach. Earlier you talked about like the human element to coaching. I've been fortunate enough to come to practice a couple times this summer, and one of the things that stood out from a coaching perspective is that you really allow the other coaches to have an active role in the practice. It's not just the Sundance Wicks show. Tell me a little bit about where that comes from and why that's so important to you.
Well, one, like, I want them to be head coaches. Like, so I think if you don't get a platform, you know, you can be an assistant. Like, you can be an assistant for 20 years, you never get a chance to have a voice or speak up. And I got guys on the staff that we hire guys on the staff that are like really good in their areas. Like, Pat Monahan's a really good defensive coach. Like, Zach Malvick is a phenomenal offensive mind. He's a great mind. both have great pedigrees from where they came from, as far as, you know, it's the proof is in the pudding for how they ran their offenses at Winona and how Southern Illinois is running their defenses. I mean, Pat has studied under some great coaches. And so with Coach Reynolds, like, he's a high level energy guy and a high level connector, and he has great juice, and like, he's always coaching culture. And so, you know, those guys, and Fletch is kind of like our quarterbacks coach, you know, he's out there, he's kind of whispering to guys and in their ears. But I want those guys to have a voice. Now, when we blow the whistle and it's time to time to lock in, we lock in, right? But ultimately, games are chaotic. Practice is chaotic. You got to make the practices like games and the games like practices. It's not like my assistants aren't going to be just saying nothing on the bench during games. They're going to be constantly talking to you, so you better get used to their voices as well. And look, there's times to amp it up, and right now is the time to amp it up. I want to overload them a little bit. And there's going to be times where we just got to, you know, tone it down a little bit. But right now, it's just there's too much teaching involved for those guys to sit back and just say nothing. I want those guys heavily involved in practice. And so that to me is just, it's the growth of the coach that I want more than anything. So I never wanted to be a coach to get guys, you know, fired. I want to get guys hired. And that's part of my, you know, is across the Bears that you just want to make sure you do a good enough job, not just for yourself, but for your team, but for your coaches. You want them to have opportunity. I don't think a lot of people run this race just to be a lifelong assistant. So I know our little guys have aspirations to lead programs at some days. And the more they feel empowered, honestly, the better. I mean, the more ownership they take. It's active ownership on everybody's part. Not silent ownership. It's active ownership. That's part of our ways we build a contagious environment of success, so to speak.
You know, you talk about getting guys hired. One component of that is winning games. And the topic that is always near and dear to my heart is the schedule, in particular, the non-conference schedule. So tell us a little bit about, like, you know, social media has kind of leaked all of that for this year. So if you're paying attention on, you know, X, you will see the schedule that's out there. I can't say Twitter anymore. But tell me, like, going forward, what does the schedule, like an ideal non-conference schedule, look like for you?
Well, I mean, I think you have to look at every team's non-conference schedule with the idea that there's other factors involved, right? Like, there's, for us, we have to schedule games where we get bought because we need money for our budget. That's just where we're at. And so we're not, you know, in Wyoming, we're fortunate enough to be able to have money to buy people to come in. And so it's not always apples to apples for everybody. And so we just got to make sure that we almost go get the most bang for our buck, right? Like, you don't want to play five high majors and kind of get nickeled and dimed a little bit. And then all of a sudden you're sitting there on the other side and you're going, man, that was rough. So you gotta find a way to make it work for you. And that's why, like, I did scheduling at Northern Illinois. It's one of the most unlike jobs of all assistant coaches in the United States of America. If there's probably one commonality of college basketball, if you said, like, what is the number one job you do not want as an assistant coach? Like, I could do camps. Some people, it probably is too. It's camps and scheduling. Like, some people, like, hate. I love doing camps, so you know I have no problem with that. But, like, scheduling side of it, it's going to be right there. It's, like, going to be A1, A2. Like, I don't want to do scheduling or I don't want to do camps. And the scheduling is just, it's just such a, it's hit or miss with everybody. You could be all the way down the road and all of a sudden, like, sorry. Or you could go, that look bad right now, then you sign a couple players and someone backs out, you know, because they're like, well, that's probably not a good game anymore. So the art of it is, you know, I'm not saying you just schedule wins. You can't schedule wins, right? But you got to get like-leveled opponents. You got to be able to play games that make sense to you. It doesn't, and this is the thing, man, it doesn't look, so hear me now, fans. Like, we don't do schedules for you. Okay. I don't make the schedule for you guys. Oh, wow. Look at all these guys. This is so much fun. If I make the schedule for you, we're going to lose a lot. Like, cause you guys want to see us play Duke here in Green Bay and you want us to Wisconsin to come up the road and play us, you know, at the Resch, and it's just not going to happen. And it's like that. Those are the things where people just sit there and they go, oh man, let's schedule. Look at this. You guys are playing this. I don't make it for you. I make it for us. Cause there's a component of psychological advantage that you got to have. Spacing in between games, who you're playing before you play somebody else, style of play that goes into all the type of teams you want to play, that makes sense for you to go against a certain style. I don't want to schedule a whole non-conference of teams that play zone. Like, is that going to help? Like, it's not going to help me, but I got to play some teams in a non-conference to play zone because there's a lot of teams that play zone in this league. So we got to be prepared for that. And so ultimately it's just going to boil down to what makes sense. And then dates have to align. People don't realize that. Like, well, why couldn't you play this team? Well, maybe we had them, but they're literally two dates off. Just couldn't match up on the right day because of turnaround time or whatever. So it's way more of a headache than it is, you know, a fun time, so to speak, scheduling. It's always the best part of the year when you can just release the schedule and be like, and like Coach Monahan will be able to relax for like 24 hours, and then it'll start scheduling for the next year.
Well, Coach, you talk about scheduling isn't necessary for the fans. I get all this what you're talking about. But on the home front, you know, making the Resch and the Crest into a great environment, that is for the fans. And so, and the fans are a big part of that. So in the places that you've coached, like, is there a place that you'd look at and say, hey, if at the Crest or Resch, we could replicate this environment as a fan group, like who would you want that to be? Or what kind of school do you think that really stood out to you as a place you played? Like, damn, that place was tough to play because the fans made a difference.
Every place that I played has been tough to play and the fans made a difference. Those programs won. I don't care how you slice it. If you win, people come. I get it. Like, that's part of it. The programs, even teams that were really, really good. Like, if you look at any program that was really good and maybe had a down year, I bet their attendance was down. Like, you look at Kentucky, and Kentucky had a bad year a couple of years. I bet Kentucky's attendance wasn't like, we're selling out every game, you know, and we're not winning. If you look at Gonzaga, if Gonzaga ever had a down year, which they don't, but like the kennel was popping. I mean, the teams that win. Now, I'll tell you this, and I don't know if it's true or not. You can't quote me on this, but you know, Grand Canyon, you know, that environment down there at GCU is electric. But I heard the students get credits for classes if they show up to games. So, like, it's just a rumor. I'm not sure about that or not. I've just heard that. But like, maybe that's why they still show up. And Bryce does a phenomenal job, and one of our assistant coaches at Wyoming, Mark Rogers, down there. So like, I'm pumped to see what they do. But that environment's insane. I mean, it really is. And it's like a techno party. All right, it's just like, it's literally the most. And we beat them down there at Wyoming, and they beat us last year at Wyoming. But when you beat them down there at Grand Canyon, it feels different because your head walks out of there and you're like, this is the loudest I've ever like heard anything in my life. They just intentionally play loud music all game long. So that environment is really cool.
I was actually there in February, and they lost to Rio Grande Valley on a last second shot. And so you want to see the pin go out of all that techno music, have a last second shot go in. It was amazing.
It's wild, right? It's wild. But like, it's a cool spot, man. And they've resurrected. They made that to what it is today. Like, the storied programs, the Cameron Indoor, you know, and Gonzaga, and they're always going to have great fans. But I think what makes it is you got to have an appropriate arena for the type of fans you're going to get, in my opinion. It's got to make sense, right? In Wyoming, where they went from a 12,000 seat arena and they downsized it to a 10,000 seat arena. So when you had 7,000, 8,000 fans in there, it felt pretty packed. You know, when you have 5,000 fans in there, it feels pretty good. So you just got to make sure that you're always, once again, constantly adapting to where you're at, what you have, to make sure that, you know, Dick Bennett said it in the Phoenix Rising book, you know, the way to make a mid-major program is you got to have an intimidating home court advantage. And so don't overshoot your landing, but make sure you got something that makes sense to your program.
So speaking of Coach Bennett, you'd mentioned that in front of him back at camp way back in the day, the young Sundance wigs, frosted tips flowing.
Oh,
you know,
man, it was flowing. It was flowing.
And you said you made a bunch of shots in front of him. So as a player, what kind of player was Sundance Wicks?
You know, this is crazy. Is I tell all these guys that come in here, like, guys, like, I came in, I was 6'4", 170 pounds. They call me Sticks Wicks, right? I was a skinny dude, man. And I honestly, when we played at Northern State, that powerhouse, Division II powerhouse, they just came off an Elite Eight appearance. Every single guy in that roster was over 6'4", 6'5". Besides one guy, Matt Severide, who's a walk-on for us, and I love Sevy. He taught me a lot about just perseverance and sticking to it. But I'm sitting here like, I'm supposed to be a wing, and every other wing that we play with is 6'7". It was insane how big these guys were, just monsters. And so I just knew, like, I had to have like a relentless level of toughness about me. I ended up having a lot of ankle problems, but one thing I could do really well is I could shoot it and I could rebound. And so I was a consummate pick and pop trailer four. I could shoot the crap out of it. And I could go rebound that basketball. I could pursue the ball like none other. So you talk about, you know, leading the league and second in the league in rebounds per game at 6'4", when there's 6'10", 6'9" guys on it, you know, that was who I am. And so that's why, like, I just don't have a soft spot for guys that are 6'9" and can't go get double digit rebounds. I'm a 6'4" average white guy, dudes getting 16 in a game. All right. So you can't go get double digit rebounds and you got all of God's gifts. Like, then you're pumping Kool-Aid. You're not pumping blood, brother. So for me, it's the shooting aspects of shooting. Anybody can learn that skill. It's the rebounding stuff that makes guys different. That's a separator. That's when I was able to go over to Sweden and play and be the only American in the top 20 in every statistical category. and go have games at 27 and 17 and go get, you know, rebounds in a professional league at 6'4" just because I was aggressive. Now I also have 7 broken noses. All right. So like there's collateral damage that goes with being an undersized guy that likes to go get his, you know, face in the mix a little bit. I just put this little snoz right here, this snosh right there. You can feel it right now. There's still like there's old deviated septum right there, just hanging out like a bad Owen Wilson movie.
You know, it's funny, Coach, you think about some of the previous coaches that have been here in Green Bay. Coach Wardle was a noted offensive player at Marquette, but his teams were, you know, all based on defense. And Coach Darner, when he was here, he was a assist maker, shot maker, you know, role player for Purdue, and his team was all up-tempo offense. So it's kind of interesting that your style of basketball really lends maybe to your style as a player, which is high energy, relentless intensity. So hopefully you'll be the guy who actually – the player you were is the team that we see. So,
well, they better take on the personality of the head coach or be a weird dichotomy, right? Like it's, but that's what's funny. I like guys who can shoot it, and I like guys who can go rebound it, man. The rebounding side of it is, it's a possession game, right? So ultimately you want to get great shots in the possession, and you also want to get more shots in that possession if you can by go getting some offensive rebounds. So hopefully the relentless pursuit of the basketball will reign supreme.
So Coach, we're going to transition into the end here. We're going to just do a couple like rapid fire. You can explain your answer or not, just move on to the next one. They're just meant to be fun questions. All right, so I'll start us off here. Better Sonny and Cher song, The Beat Goes On or I Got You Babe?
I Got You Babe.
Better to watch sunrise or the sunset?
Ooh, sunrise. Something magical in the morning, my man. Something magical.
See, I had you pegged as an evening kind of guy, so I got that one wrong.
Look, Sundance better get up when the sun starts dancing, all right? The sun starts sleeping, Sundance can't get up. That's some weird Blade, like, you know, Blade Trinity stuff, Wesley Snipes out there, you know?
Got it. A better Sundance TV rerun, Blue Bloods or Law & Order?
Oh, Blue Bloods.
Better soda, Sun Drop or Sun Kissed?
Sun-kissed. Sun drop is no good. I didn't like that one. It's bad combination.
All right. Better Wyoming Cowboy to a young Sundance Wicks, Eric Lechner or Fennis Denbo?
Ooh, Fennis Denbo. I mean, you can't go against Fennis, man. Only two jerseys and a Raptor up there, right? It's Kenny Sanders and Fennis Denbo. So sorry, Eric. Fennis Denbo.
Better Park, Grand Teton or Yellowstone?
What's Grand Teton?
National
the Wisconsin
Grand Tetons, Grand Tetons, Grand Teton.
Oh. Grand Teton.
Grand Teton. What was it? Who was it? I can't even remember the second one because I heard you just say Grand Teton.
Whatever. Yellowstone is the other one.
Yellowstone. Well, I mean, the Grand Tetons were kind of in Yellowstone, you know, right up in that area. So you said better national park?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I need to brush up on my Wyoming geography, apparently.
You're going Yellowstone right there. I'm actually partial for the Bighorns. So I love the Bighorns right outside of Buffalo, Wyoming. The Bighorn Mountains are the best kept secret in the state of Wyoming.
Oh, how far away is that from civilization?
Hey, if you're in Gillette, Wyoming, it's about a 45-minute hike over to Buffalo. If you're it's right by Shared Billings, Bozeman, Montana. It's kind of out there a little bit. No easy way to get to the Bighorns.
Okay. All right. Thinking of towns in Wyoming, better tourist town, Cody or Jackson Hole?
Oh, I mean, Jackson Hole's a tourist trap. Cody's the spot to go. They got a great rodeo in Cody. Dan Dickow likes to frequent the rodeo over in Cody. I tell you what, fun fact, old Yeezy and Kim K had that little, you know, ranch out there in Cody, probably because they knew that if they bought something like that in Jackson, they'd be broke. So.
Okay, the next one, I'm not sure how many people know this, but you're a 49ers fan. So better 49ers coach, Bill Walsh or George Seifert?
Ah, man, Bill Walsh he wrote the book, man. He wrote the book. I love George Seifert. That's the era I grew up in. Seifert and Walsh, gosh, it's a tough one. But I got to go with Bill Walsh. Score takes care of itself. Great book.
See, Fear the Phoenix podcast is giving book recommendations and basketball knowledge today. This is more than people bargained for.
It's what people want.
Coach, we know you got a little style to you, so a better fit on the sidelines this year, polos or suits?
I'll let my staff go with the polos. I'm going to wear my nice custom jackets from Brian Morris from Bespoke by BMO, and I'll wear my nice Phoenix Rising sport coats, you know. probably a little bit more Nate Oatish for me, you know.
Okay.
And the staff will go polos and khakis if they want to. They seem to like to move around a lot more. But I do enjoy this. I miss the days of suits and ties. I'm not gonna lie.
All right. So I mean, the coat with no tie, I still consider that, you know, in the suit realm. So if you get some custom stuff, All right, last one for you. Is a mint julep an abuse of bourbon?
Any bourbon that tastes like mint's not bourbon, in my opinion. So you can take that mint julep and take it back down to the Kentucky Derby and keep that, you know? That's just, and Wisconsin people are going to be kind of like upset at this comment too. I'm not going to lie to you, but like, you know, the Wisconsin old fashions are kind of an abuse of bourbon. You start putting Sprite and Squirt and, you know, 7-Up and Press and all this stuff in your nice bourbon, like the bourbon should be bourbon, you know? And like, I want to have that smoky, that smoke wagon hit different. And so, I still owe a lot of people. I make one of the best traditional old fashions around, right? I've perfected the art. So, you know, sometime, some way, some shape, somehow you find me, you know, in my twilight era, you know, running a bar somewhere in the middle of nowhere, it'll be known for its old fashions.
Yeah, I'm a brandy old fashioned guy myself. So
yeah, brandy guy, I never even heard about those until I came up here. Supper clubs and brandy old fashions and Wisconsin old fashions.
20 years from now, I'm gonna go to the Sundance Twix bar outside of Bighorn in Wyoming, and I'm gonna have one of these beautiful old fashions, or maybe a game promo. We'll do old fashioned night for a men's game, hey, and have the Wix recipe.
Sparrow, you spoke that into existence. I'm just telling you, man. Like that's probably where, like I said, when I die, bury me in the Bighorns. Right, bring me into Bighorns. I'll have Sundance Saloon out there, and we'll do bourbon and pizza. Cause that's other. I have an offshoot pizza place called Sunny Slice. Cause I love pizza too. Big pizza guy.
Oh, then you gotta give us the bonus. Like, what's the ideal pizza? Like, if you're ordering, what's on that thing?
Oh, for me, there's two types that I like. This, I'm a pepperoni and jalapeno guy. I like a little bit spice. I like a little kick there, pepperoni and jalapeno. But then this is the classic debate that everybody has. Like, you don't put pineapple on pizza, man. I'm a ham and pineapple guy too. Give me a fiery Hawaiian all day, every day. Little Frank's Red Hot on the top. You know, geez, I'll tell you what, that'll get me right. And a little extra cheese. Got to have cheese, and you got to have the right amount of cheese to sauce ratio, right? Some people just like it's too much cheese, not enough sauce, or too much sauce, not enough cheese. You got to have right ratio, right ratio.
Love it. Well, thanks for the time today, Coach. Those are super helpful questions to answer on the basketball front, and then also give us a little insight into the mind of Coach Wicks off the court. So thank you so much. We really appreciate you joining us today.
You guys are awesome. Don't spend too much time in here, man. You might get lost, all right? I don't wish that upon any man.
Huge thanks again to Coach Wicks for taking the time to come to chat with us. He had literally just stepped off the Crest Center court from practice, so really appreciate him being gracious enough to take some time and fit us into his busy schedule. I thought it was kind of interesting that he's keeping that chip on his shoulder a little bit, that Jim and I didn't mention him as a potential candidate back when we were doing those coaching search podcasts in February and March. Whoops, our bad. But seriously, we're glad to have him in Titletown and looking forward to watching him and his team play this season. Obviously, a lot has changed as far as the roster goes since the last time we recorded a podcast, but I think we'll save those talks for another time when we get a little closer to the season. Definitely plenty to talk about as we start a new chapter in Green Bay Phoenix basketball history. But for now, I'm off to update the website, especially now that I know that Coach Wicks looks at it. You can check it out too if you want. That's fearedthephoenix.com. I'm trying to keep things up to date there the best I can, but like I said in the beginning, make sure you're getting out there and enjoying these summer days. I know I am. But we'll be back again before you know it to record another episode to get ready for the college basketball season. But until then, thanks again for listening to the Fear the Phoenix podcast. Make sure you're following us on Twitter. Yes, I'm going to keep calling it Twitter. I don't think I'll ever call it X, but make sure you're following us at Fear the Phoenix. Give Jim a follow at Jim Sero. Check out the website, fearthephoenix.com. And thanks again for listening, and we'll talk to you soon.